We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
This is Greg Olson, here to tell you about my new podcast, TE1. On the show, I had a chance to talk to my fellow tight ends who have revolutionized the position from an extra lineman to a dual threat superstar. And just like my guests have changed the game, this year, NFL Sunday Ticket.tv is revolutionizing your NFL viewing experience. Stream all the live out-of-market NFL games every Sunday on your favorite devices and never miss a moment from your favorite players. Visit NFLSundayTicket.tv and use the promo code GREG88 at checkout and get 15% off your subscription. That's NFLSundayTicket.tv and the promo code GREG88. Subscribe to TE1 and get NFLSundayTicket.tv, an unmatched dual threat.
Blue Wire.
What is up, Nets fans? Welcome to the Brooklyn Buzz. I'm your host, Nick Faye. With me, as always, Jack Manuel. Jack, how are we doing?
Caris LeVert is cold, but Dame is colder.
Yes, Dame Lillard giving our boy Caris LeVert some respect. The Nets couldn't pull out the W for the Suns tonight. They lost to the Blazers 134-133. Before we get into it, quick reminder, you can find us on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, OTGBasketball.com, and Blue Wire Pods as well. This episode is presented by DealDash.com. But, Jack, this was a really exciting game. For a game that didn't matter for the Nets.
It didn't. And we heard before that Jacques Vaughn said he's not going to limit minutes. These guys are going to be going after it. And, you know, we saw the minute loads. Joe Harris, 34. Jared Allen, 37. Garrett Temple, 37. Caris LeVert, 33. Tyler Johnson, 24. And TLC, 32. You know, he wants to get these guys some good reps and some continuity heading into what it is going to be a tremendously tough series against the Toronto Raptors. So you can't get much better practice than going up against the killer that is Damian Logo Lillard. It was a heck of a game. And I mean, a lot of other teams are just sort of lying down and giving these games away. But the Trailblazers had to earn it. And the Nets were certainly right there towards the end.
Yeah, you got to give the Nets a lot of credit. From everybody on the roster to Vaughn coming up with a great game plan and trying to eliminate Damian Lillard, who still had a crazy game hitting ridiculous shots all over the court. But like you said, Jack, a lot of teams would have probably just been like, hey, we're going to rest our guys and we're going to, you know, just take the second half pretty easy. But the Nets didn't do that. And I think it makes sense because they do have 3 days off. And also, yeah. Like, this roster almost has no playoff experience. You know, like, even Joe Harris, Caris LeVert, and Jared Allen. We're talking about one series. You know, Joe was on the Cavs, but he didn't even play in those games. And, like, you have Garrett Temple, but he's not necessarily the ginormous piece. So, like, getting a lot of these young guys reps and letting them know what they're going to have to deal with and at least a pressure situation for the Blazers, who I felt like didn't pick up the intensity as much as they probably should have in an elimination game.
Look, to be fair, they've been one of the worst defensive teams in the bubble, and top to
in the regular season.
Yeah, and it's not to say that the Nets have a remarkable offense, but you know the Nets were getting a lot of good looks. You know, they were able to shoot from three incredibly well, 14 of 33 from the arc, over 42%. You know, you had Garrett Temple hitting three of them. Joe wasn't necessarily hot, but he hit one. You know, Tyler Johnson hit a couple, and TLC got back to his flame throwaways, hitting 5 of 9 from there. So it was just a really entertaining game, Nick, and I think that the Nets will take a lot out of this at more. Then, you know, probably we would have thought if this was just a meaningless game against the team, like probably so many others have been over the past couple of days of the bubble experience seeding games.
Yeah, like the Magic and Pelicans that was on at the same time.
Yeah, I'm like, what? There's another game happening right now. What's going on here? It's only Nets Blazers, and it was a heck of a game, Nick. Heck of a game.
When you see two players like just in their bag, you know, you had Caris LeVert dropping 37, then you had Dame Lillard on the other side dropping 42. It's just super entertaining. And anything that high scoring, you know, two teams scoring over 130 points is just going to make you excited. And the fact that it was close pretty much the entire game, you know, neither team really got out to any point of a big lead. And there was a little bit of like tension later on in the game, and you could feel each team really wanted to win.
Oh, yeah, big time. You know, absolutely. I think that the win still mattered to these Nets team. It's they weren't playing to just like, you know, let it go. And despite the fact that it meant bugger all, you know, we've solidified a 7th seed. There is no point in winning other than getting a 500 record. I still think a 35-37 record to finish the seeding game and season is outstanding, considering what we've had, what we've sort of experienced throughout the season and in this with this current roster that Sean Marks has put together. So, you know, the fact that the Nets showed fight is something that has been emblematic of this whole bubble experience for the Brooklyn Nets. They've fought. They've been underdogs in so many games. They haven't got a lot of credit. Tonight, they finally did. Tonight, finally, Caris LeVert had the eyes on him. We were seeing national media reporters talking about him. We saw Damian Lillard giving him a heap of credit. It's fun to be a Nets fan right now, Nick, and I think that we're going to... I may have said in our OTG predictions for our spreadsheet, you know, we had all of our riders. We got a great squad at OTG Basketball. You know, they're saying Raptors in 5, Raptors in 4, Raptors in 6. You guys putting Nets in 7, baby. Let's make it happen. Rhodey's spoken into existence. I'm going 2-2.
I mean, the Nets have been doing crazy things all bubble, like all seeding games. And like you said, a lot of credit to Sean Marks, the entire organization, and the players stepping up, because no one expected them to be here with the amount of absences they have, you know, during the regular season and during the bubble, and kind of just putting this group together and them coming out and playing better than a lot of other teams that have a lot more talent. And a lot of credit just goes to the players and the coaching staff and making everything work so quickly. It's such an interesting situation that I don't think anybody could have anticipated going this way.
I certainly didn't. I think we made our predictions beforehand. I think we said 2-6, 3-5, something like that. I said 6-2. I changed my mind. Obviously, that didn't come to fruition. But 5-3, they've certainly exceeded expectations. You know, they're one of the top 3 or 4 teams to in terms of their performance relative to the expectation. You know, you've obviously got the Phoenix Suns and the Portland Trailblazers doing some insane things. But the way the Brooklyn Nets played, you know, it was absolutely remarkable. And I think a lot of credit goes to Jacques Vaughn. A lot of credit goes to the players for performing and superseding and exceeding their roles. And it was just a heck of a performance across the board from so many guys. And, you know, I think that it's time to get stuck into this one, Nick. Let's get down to that final possession from Caris LeVert. We were having a bit of a chat about it off wax. You thought Caris LeVert should have gone a bit earlier. Some people said he should have driven. What in your ideal situation should Caris LeVert have done with the final shot of the game?
Yeah, I would have liked to see Caris bring it down and then work one of those screens that he was doing with Joe Harris to get the switch on to Gary Trent and kind of take him to the rim, because he was just working him and Trent was kind of biting on all of his fakes. So I would have liked to see him kind of take it to the lane. Not necessarily, he doesn't even have to get a layup, but I think getting in that paint area, even if it's that elbow jumper we've seen a lot in these seeding games, I feel a little bit more confident there. But I think overall it's a learning experience for Caris to understand, like, this is kind of the situation, how I'm going to have to deal with it. And it probably won't be the last time over the next couple games that he's in a situation like that.
Yeah, and I think the one sort of game and clutch shot that I remember is the one against the Knicks that springs to mind.
He had one against Denver too, before he had the whole ankle foot injury.
Yeah, and both of those shots were a bit closer in rather than sort of deep range twos. And when we have been seeing him shoot those sort of mid-range jumpers, you know, using his footwork, using his balance, they have been a little bit closer than that sort of 18 to 20 foot range. They've probably been around that sort of 12 to 16 foot range, if not closer. And he was driving the ball incredibly well tonight. The strength and dexterity and balance that he showed was just absolutely insane. So, I mean, I'm not going to hate. At the end of the day, there's a part of me that's also happy that the Trailblazers are in a playing game and might take down the Lakers. Who knows? But focusing on Caris LeVert's game, Nick, it was
One more thing about that shot, Jack. Caris was so upset that he didn't hit that shot. Like he was visibly like really upset, like just emotional. And I think that just says so much about him and the player that he wants to be and how much he wanted this game. Because from the start, you could kind of tell he came out with that type of energy.
See, the Nets' third star, Nick. It seems to be the talk of Nets Twitter. It seems to be the talk of Twitter is ablaze. No Beal, no Holiday. It's all LeVert, CLVPG.
I mean, it could be. You know, I'm not Sean Marks. I don't know exactly what he's going to do. I think at least Caris LeVert has proven he's going to be a star in this league. Does it mean it's going to be with the Nets? There's no guarantee. And I think also maybe some of the coach that you choose, how he could incorporate LeVert in having all these, like, ball-dominant players or whoever's on the roster next season, you know, it's going to be a really weird situation, I guess, or I don't even want to say weird. It's a great situation to be in for the Nets because you have so many good players and so many guys that do things great where you just kind of have to find the pieces to fit. And if, hey, one guy doesn't fit, he's at a really high value where you can add somebody else into the mix that maybe fits better.
Yeah, I mean, obviously it's about fit and so many people are, it is about that. At the end of the day, it needs to be a champion. There needs to be more defense. Caris LeVert, while he's had, especially tonight, you can clan into that as well. He had a couple of steals, he had a block, but there was also just some brain fades and brain explosions from him that were just like, what are you doing on the defensive end there? So unless he's going to become a better defender, then we do need more defense. We need Chris Dunn-like, Serge Ibaka, Aaron Gordon, these sort of guys. And I don't mind if it means giving up a Dinwiddie or a LeVert. We've probably changed our mind a million times on this podcast, Nick. And people have receipts. That's what happens when you've got a podcast. But has Caris LeVert now taken over as the Nets' third best player and over Spencer Dinwiddie in terms of fit going forward? Or are you still more confident with Spencer Dinwiddie as a sort of backup six-man sort of role? It's a question that I'm sure we've pondered plenty of times in this podcast, but I thought I'd bring it up again because why not?
Yeah, I think Caris has probably exceeded Spencer as a better player. If he can prove to do this over a longer span of time, as good as Spencer is, it's a little bit of a different game. It's more of like a clear-cut drive. There's not much of that in between. And I think three-point shooting-wise, you know, Spencer's the better catch-and-shoot guy. I feel a little bit more confident probably with Caris on the pull-ups, at least this season. But in terms of the fit, I think Spencer's proven already that he could probably fit with a guy like KD and Kyrie and still have a pretty big impact in the game, where LeVert, it's just really not known. You know, even with the time that we've seen him on the court, we have never really seen him play with a great player. And like the sample size with Kyrie was so small. You know, most of those games came early in the season when the team wasn't really running anything or in sync at all. And then when he came back later in the year, they were kind of all over the place where Caris was in that bench role. So it's tough to say if he could fit. Like, based off what we've seen, the things that Caris does best, you know, Kyrie and KD pretty much do better. So it's like trying to make that fit is going to be tough. Like I said, I feel like the coach is going to have a big impact in how to get value for all these guys if they are still on the roster. But based off of what we've seen from both guys, I still probably say Spencer is a more adaptable player. But Caris, I think, has like a higher peak of having a big impact on the game when he's at his best.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, you're assessing a lot of things, like you said there, Nick. You know, talent. Do you just want the better player on your roster?
Probably. And make it work afterwards.
And exactly. You just sort of, you know, and obviously, there doesn't have to be an off-season trade. Maybe if things don't work, maybe come the trade deadline, maybe that's where you start to make some
moves. Leaning towards that, I think, a little bit more. Like, initially, I was thinking, hey, let's get this done in the offseason so they get that done. But then, like, you're seeing so much talent of these guys where it's like, hey, it might all be here other than maybe, like we mentioned, like one or two defensive pieces. It all might be here. And if we do need to make that change, we could always make it at the deadline because the two key cogs in Kyrie and KD aren't going to change.
Yeah, we know that the Nets need defense. And there's not, obviously, TLC isn't really going to cut it in the regular season and in playoff games as good as he has been. We'll get to those guys.
He's as good as a bench guy.
He's being great as a bench guy. You know, we've got a lot of guys, and as would Tyler Johnson for that matter, as would Garrett Temple for that matter. But in saying that, yeah, it is the roster construction is going to continue to be a topic until the Nets are, until it's like the postseason next year, probably until February 15 or whenever the end of the trade deadline in 2021 is. You know, that's when the discussion will eventually end, and we can go, all right, this is the team we got. This is where we go for the 2021 championship. But
Sunday, Sunday, Sundays are coming back in the NFL. With NFL Sunday Ticket.tv, you can stream every live out-of-market NFL game every Sunday afternoon on your favorite devices, plus Red Zone and DirecTV Fantasy Zone channels. Never miss your favorite teams and favorite players. No matter where you live, NFL Sunday Ticket.tv is your key to the most glorious Sundays ever. Use the promo code BLUEWIRE at checkout to get 15% off your subscription. Visit NFLSundayTicket.tv and use promo code BLUEWIRE. Have you ever heard of DealDash.com? It's the best, most honest bidding site where you can win things you'd never expect at a price you'd never believe. They have over 1,000 auctions every day on electronics, appliances, beauty products, home decor, and even cars. Here's how it works. It's like an auction, but every item starts at $0, and it only goes up 1 cent every time you bid. The kicker is the auction clock restarts after just 10 seconds. That means every time you bid, everyone else has 10 seconds to answer, or the item is yours. If you go ahead and buy now, DealDash is offering our listeners an extra 100 free bids upon signup, on top of their other discounts. Go to DealDash.com and use the offer code BACKBOARD or DealDash.fm/BACKBOARD. That's DealDash.fm/BACKBOARD.
Nick, on Karis LeVert's game in particular, like you mentioned, 37 points, 16 of 29 from the field, 1 of 5 from 3, hit all 4 free throws, 6 rebounds, including an offensive one, had 9 assists, 2 steals, a block. Did increase those turnovers a little bit in the last half, but just an outstanding performance from CLVPG.
Yeah, I mean, the efficiency is really great. Obviously, the turnovers aren't amazing, but some of them were just like, hey, he had the ball in his hand so much, started to get double team, and obviously not the most talented Nets team in the world. But 16 of 29 from the field, and he was just kind of going to work against everybody on Portland. They didn't really have anybody that could slow him down. You know, Gary Trent, CJ McCollum, Dame Lillard, Melo, whoever it might be. And I think Karis LeVert did a great job of using his height advantage. You know, was that making the extra pass and having those 9 assists, or was that just kind of shooting over somebody in the paint? Really good game. And, you know, Sean Marks talked about it that pregame interview, saying how, like, LeVert, the game has just slowed down for him. And I think that's just one of the most apparent things that we've seen in these seeding games, where he's reading things and understanding and manipulating the defense a little more than we've seen him do it in the past.
It's weird because we've been seeing the rise.
Remember the first year we did this and watching Karis LeVert? You said, like, deer in the headlights. And now it's the opposite.
Yeah, deer in the headlights. I specifically remember us saying that. You know, he didn't have control of his own body, let alone the game of basketball and the game awareness and the basketball IQ. But it's been tremendous, the rise that he's had in the 4 years of him being in the league. He's a star. You know, he's a star. He might not be a superstar. He's not Damian Lillard. He's not Kevin Durant. But he is a growing star. And, you know, I'm intrigued that when Corey and I maybe get into a bit of a top 50 sort of ranking where this guy would be on the list. But that's a discussion for another day. Nick, who was the second best player for the Brooklyn Nets tonight?
Oh, man, that's a really good question. Tyler Johnson had his moments, but I think I'm going to go with Jared Allen. Just like a lot of versatility in there. There was a layup or two that he did miss, but he did also have a nice couple post moves. And then those 6 offensive rebounds were really big in the second half. 4 assists again. And there was this one play, I think it was in the second, I can't remember if it was the second quarter or third quarter. Where he kind of rotates over to Dame, forces Dame to get the pass, and then recovers on Zach Collins and gets the block. That was probably one of the best plays of his career, and that's only a play a handful of defensive bigs in the league can make.
And he was making so many defensive rotations. It seemed to me that, you know, this isn't a Kenny Atkinson slander podcast, but the drop coverage where it's just...
We got Jared Allen tonight.
Exactly. Whereas Jared Allen using his defensive instincts and just letting him do his thing, I put out on Twitter that I think that he can be an all-defensive caliber center and big man in the league in years to come. If he plays the way that he does in terms of the rotations that he was making, you know, especially that play, you know, I think he had 3 blocks tonight, and that one was just otherworldly. The IQ that he has shown on that end of the floor and the confidence that he's shown more offensively, putting the ball on the floor, the lefty hook, the righty hook, having 6 offensive rebounds out of 11 of his total boards, in that closing stretch, he just got us extra possessions. He willed himself, and the Nets were getting out-rebounded plenty, you know, with Zach Collins, Melo, and Yusuf Nurkic in the first half, and Jared Allen just sort of set the tone there, and other guys were just boarding like crazy. An outstanding game from him. You know, obviously
he drew a couple fouls down there, too.
He did. He did. And obviously, he didn't hit all those free throws and probably would have iced the game if he had hit more than 4 of 10. But an absolutely tremendous performance from Jared Allen. And, I mean, we've talked about sort of the performance of how he would fit on next year's Nets team. That's probably another discussion for another day. But, boy, oh, boy, am I just loving the young center, the young Fro do his thing right now. Nick, Garrett Temple, I thought his IQ and his the wisdom that he imparted and just the smartness and the right plays, you know, 3 of 7 from three. He boarded like crazy himself, 4 dimes. And that little TNT clip that we saw of him sort of going to Jeremiah Martin, he's like, I don't care, that's Michael Jordan. You got him. You got him. It was awesome. I thought Gary Temple had a tremendous game. And the consistency and just efficiency of just making the right plays, hitting the right shot, making the right rotation, guarding Dame, guarding CJ. Another great game from GT, the Prez.
Yeah, I think we've talked about this a lot over the last couple games. Him in that complimentary role where you're not asking him to do too much, he's able to focus a little bit more defensively. And I think having him out there when the Nets were, you know, trapping, running different zone schemes, going back to man-to-man, whatever it was, having a guy like Garrett Temple to communicate is such a huge plus. With such a young team, and we talked about this in the past, Jared Allen's not necessarily the most vocal guy. Typically, your center's a guy kind of screaming out defensive, you know, whereabouts and rotations, but Garrett Temple's able to help out in the area, being such a veteran, and having an understanding about what Vaughn's trying to do.
Absolutely. He's having a tremendous bubble experience. I think that without him, the Nets would be struggling on both ends of the floor. I think his leadership and his communication, like you mentioned, has been invaluable. Joe Harris, Nick, wasn't the best from three, but mid-range Joe was certainly making some plays tonight.
Yeah, they were really pushing him off the line. They were just pretty much riding behind him in terms of like the off-ball stuff, and they're just like, hey, you're not going to shoot threes tonight. And in the first half, you could tell it had an impact on like getting Joe touches and kind of almost took him out of the game. But in the second half, I felt like he was a little bit more aggressive. And one thing I really liked from Joe tonight was he realized like, hey, that's Dame Lillard, that's CJ McCollum, that's Gary Trent. Like, I'm bigger than all three of those guys. If I have them on a one-on-one possession, I can probably drive to the rim on them because I'm physically stronger than them. So I thought that was a nice use of his size tonight.
Yeah, and I can shoot over them. You know, he's a guy who's like 6'6 or so, and all those three guys are like 6'4 or shorter. You know, Joe Harris has height. He's got a nice jump, a great rhythm in his shot, no matter where he is on the floor.
It's crazy we haven't seen more of this mid-range stuff over the last couple of years.
Man, it seems to me that the Nets, as a complete offense, if Jacques Vaughn is going to be the coach next year, and we'll eventually dive deep into coaching stuff, but the way Jacques Vaughn is implementing the offensive scheme and giving the guys the independence and freedom to take shots that they want and that they see fit rather than sort of sticking to, I guess, a more rigid scheme in the past, it seems to be working wonders. And it's not necessarily affecting the three-point shooting either. They're still taking a lot of them. And if anything, it's leading to better ball movement, confidence on both ends of the floor. But yeah, Joe Harris, 19 points, 9 of 14 from the field, despite only being 1 of 4 from the three-point line. Did have 4 dimes himself as well. Did keep that streak going. 60 games we're at now. He's going to keep that going until the rest of his career. It's going to be like 500 games. Don't worry about that, Nick Fay. The other starter for the Nets, Nick, Rodion Skuritz. I thought that, again, I love him in the starting lineup, and I just love these little pesky plays that he's doing. I'm loving the athleticism a lot. I love that block on Yusuf Nurkic. Despite the fact that the box score doesn't leap out to you, we've said this before about him, 8 points, 3 of 5 from the field, 5 boards, 2 assists. I did have that block too. He's just making smarter plays, and I think that as a fourth, fifth starter, he's just playing efficient, sound basketball.
Yeah, he's given the Nets something that they really lack is some of like that length and athleticism, and having him tonight, especially that block on Nurkic, it's like Nurkic didn't understand that Rodion's was like a 6'9 guy that could jump. I was just like, okay, you're just almost giving him the block. And then I loved, you mentioned the pesky stuff. He got in there, swiped at a rebound, bounced it off Nurkic's leg. He was pissed about it. That's the type of thing that you just really enjoy seeing from him. Then there was another play from Rodion's in this game where he took the rebound and he just went straight to the other end and got a layup. That's the type of stuff that's like, hey, that's just an easy basket that you need to take advantage of when you're the less talented team. And there's still a lot of room for growth with him. Foul trouble was a little bit of an issue tonight, but you can see the positive and the potential in him. And like, even if he's not on the Nets next year, the Nets, Jock Vaughn and himself have done a great job of getting his value back up to where it was before the season.
Oh, yeah, he's an NBA player going forward. He's going to be in this league for an extended period purely because of these moments, these sort of games, and you see the moments that we're sort of analyzing. He's got length, he's got athleticism, and whatever system he's in, if they can utilize and realize, you know, his talents, his strengths, his weaknesses, like Jacques Vaughn has in this Orlando bubble experience, and I'm loving him. You know, obviously, we advocated for him to be starting quite early on, and Jacques Vaughn hasn't been afraid to make changes. You know, we've said a lot of good things about Jacques Vaughn throughout this Orlando bubble experience, and to me, you know, I was having a bit of a back and forth with OTG's alumni and friend. I've been on the outlet before, Dave DeFore, talking about Jacques Vaughn and his case for next year's head coaching spot. And, you know, he was more on the Ty Lue sort of side of things and essentially was just on the saying that it was basically ego management. But we've sort of talked about Jacques Vaughn and how he is in terms of the interactions that he has with his players and how he connects with them. So it'll be interesting to sort of see. But, Nick, it seemed to me the Nets had like a seven-man rotation, which is essentially what you do in the playoffs. It's like Mark D'Antoni style. Tyler Johnson and TLC were the only guys to play more than double-digit in minutes. You know, Jeremiah Martin had some minutes early and was making mistakes, just wasn't ready out there. You know, Justin Anderson was just he was too small. He was getting absolutely bodied by Hassan Whiteside. So the rotations and adjustments made in-game were quality again from Jacques Vaughn. But who do you want to touch on first, TJ or TLC?
I'll just touch on the rotation real quick. I think like the seven-man thing is right, Jack. I think getting closer to the playoffs, you want to shrink things down. It'd be nice if one of the other, you know, quote-unquote big men between Justin Anderson, Lance Thomas, and Dante Hall could step up for the playoffs. It's kind of yet to be seen what will happen with there. But let's talk about Tyler Johnson because he hit some really big shots tonight, and they were tough. Like, we were not talking about easy looks. He's hitting mid-range shots, coming off screens, pulling up with defenders in his face. He was locked in trying to help out his old team, the Phoenix Suns.
And Devin Booker's going to have to shout him dinner or something. Despite the fact we didn't get the win, he was on. And he's been on for a large majority, again, for these sitting games. 16 points for him tonight, 7 of 13 from the field. Hit two big threes, had a couple of dimes, had a steal as well. You know, he's been tremendous to this team. And, you know, like I said before, it seems to me like he knows and he feels valued. And he's replicating that on the floor with the confidence that he's shown to hit shots left, right, and center. You know, I love a lefty as well. He just looks, it looks sweet when he hits the shot. You know, he's got nice mechanics. It's not necessarily like it's an ugly form. I like seeing him hit it. And I mean, I've said before, I'll say it again, I want to see him on next year's team filling out the depth of the roster because, you know, you just need a guy who can create his own shot. That's the number one skill, I think, in today's NBA. Obviously, we need defenders, and you know Tyler Johnson isn't necessarily the greatest defender in the world, but when you need a bucket with the second unit or whatever out there, Tyler Johnson did that time and time again, and has been doing that time and time again for the past eight games.
He does a nice job of relocating too, you know, off ball on rebounds or someone driving and trying to get himself in a position where he can be there for a kick out. And that's kind of an underrated skill, especially when you're going to be playing, if he's on the team next year, with a lot of guys who are going to get a lot of attention, and Kyrie and KD, possibly Karis and Spencer as well. So he'll kind of almost, his role will almost get easier moving forward if he's still on the team. But you have to like what you see from him, including the hustle plays. Defensively, he's not amazing, doesn't really have great strength inside, but he is willing to put in the effort and take that occasional charge.
And I mean, in terms of like the pickups, the discards added to teams, Dion Waiters, J.R. Smith, Tyler Johnson, Dante Hall, Justin Anderson, these sort of guys. Off the top of my head, I know you and Corey probably would be more on this than me. There haven't been as many good signings as Tyler Johnson and what he's added to this roster. Obviously, it's been a shame that we haven't got to see Jamal Crawford, more so for this team. Obviously, the injury really did hurt his stock in that regard. But Tyler Johnson has been a genuine contributor for a team that has been winning games. And I think that we obviously analyzed, we did a whole 30-minute episode on his signing. And, you know, we were relatively measured a little bit low, a little bit high on certain things. We talked about that three-point shot being a real key indicator for how he would contribute. And I was a little bit higher than other guys on Nets Twitter. I think that you might have been a little bit lower than I was. But in general, he's been sensational for the Brooklyn Nets.
Yeah, I mean, he's done a great job in kind of revitalizing his NBA career, where there was some question after Phoenix and having the down years in Miami if he was just going to kind of be this guy that hangs at the end of rosters, maybe doesn't play a whole season, maybe plays a half a season. And he's been good for the Nets. You know, obviously, see how he does over the course of an 82-game year, but you have to look at it as a real positive in moving to next year. And, I mean, talking about guys that have been signed, the only one that really pops up is, like, Campaign, who is really good for Phoenix. True. But you kind of wonder if, like, Tyler Johnson had signed with the Lakers instead of J.R. Smith, would that be more beneficial to them? It kind of feels like it would be.
Yeah, that's a really good point. It's a really, really good point. That's something you'll say for JB2 or the outlet. Let's get back to some Nets basketball. We've talked about third star Caris LeVert, fourth star TLC, Nick. It's time. Let's make it happen.
His what confidence is ascending. Like,
oh my God. Like, you know, I think that, like, if we were to represent all of these Brooklyn Nets by emojis, the stock rising emoji is TLC and then some. You need about five of those for how he's been playing. He's having like 50-40-90. It's absolutely insane. 19 points tonight, 7 of 13 from the field, 5 of 9 from three, 8 boards, had a dime. Boy, oh boy, Timothée Laurier-Cabarrot, it is raining in those waterfalls.
Yeah, he's great from the corner, you know, just a lockdown shooter over there. And just like you could see the confidence. And then on some of the drives, he was like, hey, I could take this guy off the dribble. You know, we saw him go at Melo a couple times. And I was like, hey, you understanding like where you have the advantage in and taking advantage of that and attacking. I was pretty happy with the way he played tonight. And even defensively, there's a couple of fouls that were rough where he just needs to understand like where he needs to position himself, and he's not going to get the benefit of the doubt being TLC, especially when he's going against Dame Lillard. So just the small things, but the Nets have to be really, really happy from what he came in as in Brooklyn into where he's at now in such a short period of time.
Yeah, I was fortunate enough to do a breakdown of one of his games earlier in the seeding games, and he's left to right crossover.
Yeah,
it's something that gives him a lot of space and, you know, allows him to attack the basket in really meaningful ways. So, you know, I'm loving, obviously, teams aren't necessarily going to be scouting TLC, but
he's going to get a lot of open shots.
He will, but maybe not against the Toronto Raptors. Their defensive schemes are tremendous, and that coaching battle, we're going to be diving deep into the playoff preview. Don't worry about that on future episodes, but it was an insane game, Nick. You know, I think that the way that the early part of the game, that the second chance points that the Trailblazers were starting to garner, but then the boards ended up being relatively even. You know, the Nets rebounded the ball quite well in the second half. It was just even across the board. You know, no team led by more than 10. Both team, the Trailblazers had a 9-point lead themselves. It was just back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And I mean, overall, you can't say enough good things about the Brooklyn Nets, but the Trailblazers were just there at the end, and they had a guy who is just
on fire. Yeah.
He's on fire. He's cold. He's all the weather elements. He's all of he's earth. He's fire. He's wind. He's water. I don't know what to say about Damian Lillard, but Caris LeVert is probably a number of those elements as well with how he's been playing. It's exciting watching this team, Nick. I think the Brooklyn Nets have been playing some of the most exciting basketball of any teams out there. And we're lucky enough to recap it on a pod.
Yeah, and it's just been really enjoyable, especially going to a situation with no pressure, like just like no expectation. These guys are going to maybe win a couple games, and they've completely outperformed that. And it's nice seeing so much growth on the roster. Like, I don't think I anticipated seeing guys improve so much from the period of March into essentially the beginning of August. Like, yeah, they were able to work out some, but we've seen a lot of growth in different elements of guys' games, from even Joe Harris looking a little bit more aggressive offensively and confident in that mid-range shot, Caris LeVert adding to his bag from the handles to the mid-range to the pull-up, whatever you want to see out there, Jared Allen's passing, Rodion's looking more like an NBA player, the same thing with TLC, maybe revitalizing Tyler Johnson. Just like a lot has happened in terms of like player improvement, and I think, I guess some credit has to go to the coach, and obviously a lot of credit goes to the players.
Absolutely. Nick, we might got time for maybe one of these topics. If not, we'll discuss some of them on future Buzz episodes. I've got Joe Harris re-signing, coaching news, KD workouts, or LeVert's Instagram posts. Which one or ones do you want to touch on?
Let's hit them all. We got enough time.
All right, let's dive into it. The Joe Harris re-signing, obviously, we're going to first because I'm deciding where this podcast is going to go. But Sean Mark spoke to the Yes Network and was speaking about making it priority number one. News that I woke up to, Nicky, I think it was literally the first tweet in my stream when I woke up, and I'm like, this is good to hear. This is good to hear. God damn, Joe Harris is going to be on this team next season, and Joe Tsai better be paying him.
Yeah, I think we kind of already knew this was going to be the case. At least we assumed it was. And to hear Sean Marks come out and say it, I would be very, very, very surprised if Joe Harris was not on this team. It feels like almost a lock at this point, unless somebody offered him literally the max on another team. Like, I just can't really envision a world where the Nets don't re-sign him. And even Sean Marks, like, emotion during that interview, it seemed like he was really committed. And he even mentioned, like, I don't know the exact quote, but it was like playing next to a guy like Kyrie and KD, like, Joe's the perfect fit.
He is. There is literally no more a perfect fit other than maybe like Serge Ibaka. And, you know, we've got Joe Harris already. You know, we're lucky enough to, he is a restricted free agent. So we should be paying him. And I think that one thing that Joe will do, like he did with that, I know some people were in that 2-year, $16 million deal, and some general NBA people like Danny LaRue and Nate Duncan were like, oh, that's a bit too high. And it's just like, no, he's the best shooting player. He's one of, if not the best shooter in the league, and he's becoming a three-level scorer in a lot of ways. And he tries on the defensive end, which is a lot more than you can say for a guy like Duncan Robertson and Kyle Korver, obviously, who's aging in his career. So he's just a tremendous player, and I'm very much looking forward to seeing him as a Brooklyn Net for many years to come. But
I think one thing on those guys, like undervaluing Joe, I think people don't have enough respect for players still improving when they're older. Where, like, you look at Joe and you're like, oh, he's not the youngest guy. How much better can he really get? But he's drastically improved over those 2 years of that contract. Like, he went from being a really, really good shooter to being a very good offensive player that can complement almost anybody in the NBA. And like you mentioned, he's willing to put in effort defensively and understands where he needs to be. He's never going to lock anyone down, but he has a piece on a championship team, a place.
He has a big place on any championship team. You put him on any roster in the NBA, and they're going to be damn happy to have him. And I'm damn happy to have him on the Brooklyn Nets. He provides me with plenty of joy on a daily, hourly, nightly, eveningly basis. Think of what you will when it's getting late here. You can think about what you will with that. But we'll touch on the coaching news, Nick. And obviously, it's been a topic that has been discussed at length by us, and it is going to continue to be discussed because Chris Mannix reported that Ty Lue is expected to be a leading candidate for what could be several NBA coaching openings, and he's reportedly especially interested in the Nets. Josiah apparently wants a full-scale head coaching search, and the candidates have been rumored to be Jason Kidd, Ime Udoka, Ty Lue, and Jeff Van Gundy, and obviously Jacques Vaughn as well. What are your reactions, I guess, to hearing this news, Nick?
Yeah, I think it's kind of similar to all the names we've heard before, other than Udoka, who I think has been mentioned in other coaching jobs and obviously has a connection to Sean Marks with the Spurs thing. But Ty Lue still seems to be the favorite in terms of it. And obviously he's going to want to coach here because, like, what's the best chance at you winning a championship? And if you're Ty Lue and you've only coached for X seasons and you already have two or three chips, your resume is already starting off really good and you're already a young head coach. So I could understand why Ty Lue would want to come here. And other than that, I mean, no, it makes sense for Josiah to want to do that full, you know, in-depth coaching search because he has the money, and it's a big decision because this is a window that you don't necessarily get to be in very often. You know what I mean? Like, this is the literal championship window, and you don't know when the next one's going to come. Obviously, you hope it's right after or, you know, not too far after, but it could not come for another 10 years. So you got to take advantage of it at this exact moment. You look at a team like Portland, who's been good for the last 10 years, but they haven't ever been in the championship window. So you can be really good and not be in that window. So I think wanting to make sure everything is perfect is the right way to go.
Absolutely. And obviously, get rid of Jason Kidd and Jeff Van Gundy on that list, and I'm pretty bloody happy.
I'd rather see Stan on there.
Yeah, exactly. How good has Stan Van Gundy been on Twitter and on the TNT broadcast with the GOAT, Iron Eagle? Jeff Van Gundy, he's not a modern NBA coach. I don't care what anyone else said he did in 20 years ago for other NBA teams. And Jason Kidd, I mean, the best thing that he did for the Brooklyn Nets was leave us. And he left in a really, really shady way. I get that he's a New Jersey native, and, you know, Kyrie and KD probably love him, but get that dude away from me. He's Kittle finger, and he always will be. He's an absolute snake, and I don't like what he's done off the court. I'm not a big fan of his character. I respect what he's done for the New Jersey organization. I respect him as an assistant head coach, but the character I question the overall character of Jason Kidd. Don't know the bloke, but from a lot of things that I've seen and from the actions that he has portrayed as a partner, as a coach, as just a lot of things that are red flags for me, Nick. But, you know, Jeff Van Gundy is Jeff Van Gundy. You know, we know Mark Jackson isn't on this list, thankfully. That's one guy that thankfully isn't. But, you know, Ime Udoka, I assume, will be a head coach in in some form or another, I think he was rumored for the Bulls and the Knicks head coaching position. And Ty Lue, obviously, we talked about it a little bit before, talking about Dave DeFore sort of saying that ego management. And we know Ty Lue has had experience doing that with Kyrie Irving in the past and LeBron James in the past. Those are two massive egos, but not in a bad way. When we say egos, we don't say it with any negative connotation. These are two of the best superstars. And Kevin Durant, and it's essentially you're placing LeBron James with Kevin Durant. And can Ty Lue do that? You know, I'm very confident in either Ty Lue, Jacques Vaughn, and, you know, let's sneakily mention Greg Popovich as well, Nick. We've got to mention him. He was asked today, post-game, by the media, if he's going to be coaching next year. He said, why not? He didn't say where. He said he wants to be coaching. And if he wants to be coaching a championship, his team isn't even making the playoffs these days.
I mean, it's not as crazy as people want to make it seem. And I know, like, people are like, oh, why would Pop want to coach KD and Kyrie? He already has a relationship with them. And for my eyes, and, like, the Spurs are a smart organization, it seems like this upcoming season would probably be a tank or a rebuild. There's no way for them to retool and be a very good team. And there's probably not even a guarantee they could make the West next year, depending on the moves they make. I mean, make the playoffs in the West next year, even if they made moves this offseason.
POP to BKN, let's make it happen. If there's all where there's a will, there's a way. I mean, Nick gave Kevin Durant a 2% chance of still coming back, despite the fact that about 5 minutes later after the podcast, he announced that he wasn't. But speaking of Kevin Durant, that's a good segue, Nick. He's having some workouts in LA. He's calling LeBron James not the go. He's wearing WNBA jerseys. He's working out with Spencer Dinwiddie. You like what you see?
Yeah, I mean, it's good to see him with, you know, some of his G League teammates in terms of Long Island Nets guys out there. And then obviously Spencer spending some time with him. It's always good to see KD on the court. And obviously, you know, all the other stuff, too, is just like it's a positive. And even Sean Marks, I think, mentioned that KD and Kyrie were mentoring Caris LeVert this summer. So just a lot of pluses on the KD side.
I will say this. I can't remember who I saw it from or whether it's an original thought, but I'm normally jacking a lot of people's other thoughts anyway. Oh, he healthy. So he's getting there. And imagine when he pulls on the number 7. And whenever we get to play basketball again next season, it's going to be goddamn exciting. But
one more note on KD. He also mentioned like being healthy, and now it's about like getting back to being that elite NBA player. We're like, hey, my body's feeling right, but like you don't wake up out of bed and be Kevin Durant. Like, he's a skilled assassin. He's worked at his craft for years. So it's going to take some time for him to get back up to that KD level.
Of course. And I think that extra time, we've sort of seen Yusuf Nurkic come back from an incredibly, obviously, a broken leg and an Achilles injury are both very, very different ailments. But the impact that he has had since coming back has been, you know, insane. And, you know, Zach Collins as well coming back from a really serious injury. So it's going to be interesting to see what version of Kevin Durant we see. And I think that the motivation that he has to probably prove a lot of naysayers wrong, be they the Twitter, the Twitter people, the blog boys, let's call them the blog boys. That's a better one. He's going to be playing some goddamn good basketball sooner rather than later. But we will end with Nick, CLV, getting cryptic on Insta, and he posted his fit. He tagged it bubble, wearing a nice little hoodie, you know, carrying his bag in. And we talked about the stock rising emoji relating to TLC, but he put 3 stock rising emojis for himself. And then Spencer Dinwiddie responded, killer caption, lol, I respect it. Nick, is he talking about building up his own stock? Is he talking about rebuilding his stock? Let's dive deep into social media BS.
Yeah, I literally posted the same exact caption for Caris LeVert on the OTG Instagram page. I posted a clip and I put LeVert trending up with 3 things, just exactly like he. I think I actually did it first, so that's even more funny. I think it's just like Spencer being a dick, kind of like making fun of him for having a basic ass caption. I mean, it could be something deeper, but I really don't think it is. I think it's either like him being a dick or him just like laughing because, like you mentioned, it's stock related. We know Spencer's all about that Bitcoin.
Yeah, well, maybe he knows Caris LeVert's cryptocurrency stock is rising, you know, in the pandemic. You know, we're moving away from traditional currency, Caris crypto Caris, whatever you want to call it. Maybe that's the new nickname. Let's make a t-shirt, dsgntree.com. Crypto Caris is coming.
It's actually really good.
It's pretty good. I mean, I come up with some weird and wacky thoughts when we're on this podcast. I don't know what I was saying last episode. I don't know what I'm saying this episode, but I'm glad I get to say things about the Brooklyn Nets on the Brooklyn Buzz podcast with you and Matt Brooks. It's going to be a lot of fun. The playoffs are coming. We're going to be doing previews. We're going to be diving deep all the news. It's going to be fun content for days with the Brooklyn Buzz.
Yeah, next time we're on the show, we'll be talking playoffs, and after that, it'll be playoff recap. So always a pleasure, Jack, and be sure to check us out on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, OTGBasketball.com, and Blue Wire Pods.
Sports are coming back, and so are your chances to bet on your favorite teams and events. Major League Baseball is back in action. There's no better place to start wagering than our exclusive partner, BetOnline. Check out all the odds and prop bets to bet on, all available 24/7. And with the return of sports, BetOnline has sat down with former pro athletes Eddie George, Harold Reynolds, and seven-time NBA champ Robert Horry. See what they have to say on what it's like playing without fans in a series they're calling Fandemic. Visit betonline.ag for all your odds and up-to-date sports news. Remember to use promo code BLUEWIRE to receive your new welcome bonus. That's promo code BLUEWIRE. BetOnline, your online wagering experts.